Okay, I'm Dustorm here. We're at MLG Dallas. We're sitting here with Shishka from Bungie, and we also got Greg Lewis, Brent Gamer, Red Dot, and Wacky Splash here sitting with us. We're sitting outside the venue right now because it's nice and warm out here. We're actually getting a chance to sit down. So we're really enjoying it. We got a chance to play some ODST Firefight earlier today. Got to play some... Yeah, we got our media's fast. It's kind of less than a little shortcut. So we also got to play a little bit of Heretic earlier today. So I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Greg since he probably has most of the questions for us.
First off, I guess I want to say thank you for joining us. We don't get too many people who... We ask a lot of people to do interviews, but usually they don't work out. It's good that when it works out, well, thank you. And I know you've been up for a while, right?
Well, the timing was good. When you asked, I had the PR manager right in there, so when I said yes, he didn't say no, which made it okay.
So I guess I got it's timing that worked out this time, so thank you. But so let's move on to today. Let's say about today. You started showing it at the showcase at 10, right? But how long have you been up since?
Well, today, no, I slept in a bit today, but sleeping in for me was like, it's 8 o'clock and I'm just now waking up. This is awesome. It's like it's noon for normal people. But yeah, so I got up a bit early and I went over there and I checked with the guys to make sure they were ready for me to bring the hard drives over and set up. And we've been running since 10 and we played ODST Firefight up until 3 p.m., and then at that point, or a little bit before, actually, we were looking at it, and we still had some energy in us. I had a couple great guys from the MLG staff helping me out. And we were like, you know what? Why don't we, after the ODST time is done, let's switch these boxes over to Halo 3 so people can play Heretic. And they were like, sweet, let's get on and announce it so everybody knows. And then the line that died was suddenly very alive again. But it was good. It worked out really well. Everyone seemed to have a good time, which is awesome. Everybody was really stoked to get to play, and they seemed to like what they saw.
Are you guys... the game's already pretty much going to ship. I mean, by coming out to these events, is not... I would guess not too much is going to change based on what people are saying. So are you, even though that you have that back here, is it still excited? Still exciting to come out and see kids come out to play it before, you know... interact with pro players and stuff. Is that still exciting to come out in, even though, you know, that you're not going to be able to change anything in the game?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, this isn't like a beta test, for example, where you show people things, you get their feedback, and then you try to... you filter and translate that feedback into changes to better the game. What this is for us is this is a chance for us to say, hey, here's what we're bringing to you guys in a few weeks. This is what we want you guys to be playing. And when the reaction is, yes, we will be playing this in 3 weeks, that's exactly what we want to hear. So it's very exciting, and I had a great time just talking to everybody that came by to play. I mean, everybody was really positive, especially about Heretic, of course, which is a good sign. I mean, I can't imagine a crowd that would be harder to please with a remake of Heretic than the MLG, right? Yeah, every single person I talked to gave thumbs up. I think my favorite part was pretty early into the Switch when we started Halo 3. There were some guys that were playing and a couple guys that were watching. They were at the front of the line and they're looking at it and they're like, you know, I don't know. I mean, can you still do that jump? And, you know, can you go here? Like, this is the thing I always did. I wonder, I'm not too sure about this. Then the next game they came down, they sat down, they played their game, stood up and shook my hand and said, thank you for bringing back midship. And I was like, sweet. That's like $60 a piece. That's good.
I guess I would like to say thank you too, because one of the things that I missed from MLG, especially in Halo 2, was midship bomb, which was probably my favorite game type in MLG. And even though I don't think that you could play bomb like you did in Halo 2, in Halo 3, could you?
I mean, it's become like assault sort of ends and sort of almost a territory sort of thing now. Like, the game type has changed fundamentally. So they would have to do like basically the Halo 3 version of MLG assault if they wanted to do that. when we have the map in matchmaking, I'm just so bitter about what Halo 2 Assault on Midship was like that it's actually not even in matchmaking. So we have Flag and like Oddball and stuff like that, and we've made variants. So in some of them, there's like equipment is out and stuff like that. But yeah, totally like bomb. People are going to have to twist my arm to let Assault happen on Midship. Well, maybe two-sided Assault, that might be fine. But like neutral, dream on.
Out of the three maps, which one are you most excited to play yourself? Outside of showing people and having pros and like us play, which one are you excited to see?
So for me, like my favorite map of the three new ones is definitely Citadel. There was a time when Luke Smith, Eric Olson, Osborne, oh God, he's going to hear this. I'm sorry, Eric. Osborne. Absolutely. Eric hears and sees all. So that or someone's going to post it in the forums, and then he'll listen to it, walk up and punch me in the mouth. So Eric and Lucums and Brian Gerard, Sketch, and myself, we used to be all in the same room. I figure they put us in there so that they didn't have to listen to us anymore. But at the end of the day, every day for like 2 months, really, we would close the door and we'd boot up a build and we'd play doubles on Citadel. And it was amazing. And we just had a blast. Mainly just Slayer. Just Slayer BRs, basically. Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I mean, the four of us start with battle rifles. I mean, there's 130 people at Bungie. Not everybody has the same tastes. But that's a question I see all the time. But it basically boils down to, like, I mean, there's a place for BRs, and then there are people that simply, like, BRs are frustrating to them. And, I mean, like, you say it here, you say it out loud here, and people are going to give you crazy looks. But a lot of people just like, you know, run up, shoot the automatic weapon, punch the guy in the face. I mean, I totally get and I totally appreciate it, and I love playing BRs. But, you know, every so often it's like, BRs are like the thinking man's game, right? And sometimes you just want to relax. And the AR, and picking up other guns because you got an AR, or as of September, you have an AR and a Magnum. Picking up guns is also like part of the fun. Like you get there before the other guy, or you're fighting over it with the other guy. The other guy gets it. He also gets a grenade in the crotch. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's absolutely, that has a special place in the hearts of a lot of Halo players.
I heard you talking about with Firefight that there's only one achievement on you could get on Firefight. Is that right? One thing you were willing to talk about. I guess, I don't know if you're... Yeah, I heard you talking to somebody and they asked you about achievement and you said it would literally take you 3 hours without dying to get. Is there any kind of way you can... We were talking about it. We had no idea how that would come up. So if there's any kind of thing you could say about that achievement, we were just wondering.
Well, to clarify, I was talking about a Vidmaster achievement. And to be even more clear about it, the Vidmaster's achievements are these series achievements that started in Halo 3 and end in Halo 3 ODST. After earning each of those achievements, you're able to go to Bungie.net, look up your profile, and basically you'll click a button, and the next time you log into Halo 3 multiplayer, you'll be able to switch to Recon armor. That's what we've been calling the Road to Recon for, like, the past year or so now. I get messages in Baker's dozens, morning, noon, and night. And probably still will, but that's okay. That's what the block option is for. But as for this particular achievement, without describing in great detail, people will find out pretty soon what I mean, because, you know, they'll play the first time, then they'll look at the achievements, and they'll look at that one, and then they will curse our name aloud. It's the important thing to point out is that survival is important. And it's not a it's not a hard time limit or anything like that. It's actually just a vicious, you have to reach this milestone in Firefight. And, no, it's totally cruel. It's a very cruel achievement. At one point in playtesting, we did a playtest, which was basically, let's make sure all of our achievements are functioning. And, so at one point I actually gathered, like, I had three testers, three very strong testers, like, they were good. And I'm like, okay, we're playing through this. Thank you. And, buy ODST! $60 at your local. Go to Bungie.net and click our Amazon link. Or GameStop. Sorry to get back on track. So I had these three guys with me. Right on. I'm so happy for you. Now we're totally derailed, but it's all good. All right. Had a game going. Solid players. I knew it was going to happen. In the build we were using, it wasn't the final build. It was getting really close. I mean, that's why we were testing all these little aspects of the game. There was a glorious bug, an epic bug, a bug of legendary proportions, wherein you'd get to seconds of getting that achievement and the game would disconnect all the players. And we hit that bug. It was something, I mean, we were able to fix it. We were able to predict what was going on. It was something we knew about, but it was starting to get kind of sporadic. And even more so, like, people had to be able to get to that point. I died a little inside. And the worst part is that the testers all knew it was coming, so when it happened, as the game was getting ready to disconnect us, they started laughing. They totally knew it was going to happen. The three of them committed their time just to hear me screaming four-letter expletives over the microphone. It's pretty much what they were there for.
Okay, let's explain Bungie's involvement with MLG. And I see that they're our main sponsor, and I see that you guys are here, but you're not here for every event. How do you guys coincide with one another?
So, shortly after Halo 3 came out, I believe, actually before I had come back to Bungie, Bungie had approached MLG, or MLG had approached Bungie, and they discussed this partnership. Basically it works out to, you know, it's kind of a mutual thing. We've given them a playlist, and they've got our logo all over the place, which is awesome to see. The old logo, we're going to have to send them, like, the updated, you know, the completely, totally different logo that we're all sporting now. Yeah, well, no, the Bungie logo, like, we finally fixed all these little things that have been driving us nuts for, like, the past decade and a half. And nobody else will ever, like, really notice the difference, but for us, it's like a load off of our shoulders because we're geeks like that, I guess. When events like this happen, and it happens to coincide with, we want to show some stuff, then, you know, either we get in touch with MLG or MLG talks to us. I think in this case, Microsoft was actually involved in making this happen. Not for the partnership itself, but for having us come out for ODST, specifically for having us come out with Firefight. Microsoft actually provided the dev kits that we played on today, and that if anyone caught the stream yesterday night, that was all done on Microsoft's dev kits that they loaned out to the MLG. It was great of them to be able to provide that stuff. It meant I didn't have to lug 8 dev kits out or more, which is fantastic. Like MLG San Diego, Luke and I actually packed those dev kits in our suitcases. You know that surcharge they put on top of, those things are heavy. I'm glad that we're able to expense those things, but that costs money. Anyhow, no, Microsoft totally threw down. They helped out with the cases, they got us out here, and, you know, then we brought the actual game on hard drives, Jared. Sitting right next to me right now. Yeah, exactly. And I have a gun for anybody that's listening. So we got to come out. The last time we came out was actually last year, MLG San Diego. Luke Smith and I came out and got to play Cold Storage on the main stage. And that was, you know, that was just before we released it for free on Bungie Day. It was Legend and Karma. Yeah. I think we did play Walshy. That was the 2v2 on Assembly at PAX. We actually played two games. I'm going to go ahead and call it Infamous because I still get messages about it. The Infamous game was recorded on and put on YouTube. And I believe he actually won that game. But all anyone remembers was it opened with me beating him down. And then the crowd, you know, ah! And the thing is about that game, I mean, if you watch the video, Luke and I's backs are to the people we're playing against. And we had already been, like, in a chain of it, so, you know, we hadn't been turning around a whole lot. We were kind of in autopilot. And so at first we're doing really well, and then at some point we found out, crap, that's Walshy. And then it just, like, he didn't even have to try, he was already in our heads. And we just fell apart, and he ended up winning that one. But the second one we actually managed to take it home. I think it was pretty close, but, there was a kid that had been waiting in line for ages, didn't actually have someone to play with, and Walshy jumped in with him. So, again, with, like, what I was telling you guys before we were recording this, Walshy is the greatest human being alive. Like, the nicest person I've ever met. And, like, he's works with Gamers Outreach and all those guys. It's awesome to see the pros get involved in that stuff.
I guess before I move on away from MLG stuff, does anybody sitting here, Dustin, Brent, any of you guys, have a question about anything about today's event or any MLG stuff at all? Dustin, Brent?
I'm Ryan. I'm just kind of irrelevant with your AR statement earlier. I'm a big fan of Bungie. Look at my shirt. Herbie Takes. You like that? I mean, it's got the Bean Rob. It's got the AR. I mean, I'm a big fan of the AR. Don't get me wrong. But there is a couple things that I just sometimes, like, you know, I kind of like, it edges me a little bit. And you did say, yeah, BR is a mind game, you know, it's always there. It's, you know, how to come in and out, you know, when you need to. And I do like the AR equally as a BR, but, like Guardian has, you know, a couple map, you know, like it's just hard to push sometimes. And it's sometimes like the pistol, it can only go so far. If you guys, you know, brought the pistol back, like ODST, I would be like, oh my god, this is awesome. It's Halo 1 all over again, but with Firefight. I mean, come on. But, I don't know, it's just the matchmaking is you have to veto for certain maps, and even though it's like sometimes the map you're not comfortable with, you have that BR start, and it's really like, I do like how you guys have to like get us used to different stuff, but I think maybe put like, maybe a couple more BRs, you know, give it a little bit more of a, you know, cause whenever we play doubles, we get team BR, or we get team Slayer on Team Guardian, and the next thing you know, like, we have to wait 30 seconds for one BR. Wait another 30 seconds for another BR, and then we push. It's the patient that does count, but it throughout that time, you know, it's like, I really want to help my friend across map, but I'm hosing him down with a pistol across map, and even though sometimes I do get those awesome assists, yeah, like, I'm not gonna lie, I'll embarrass a guy with a BR across map with a pistol, and it is just by far, you talk that trash, you live it. But, I mean, put a couple more in there, just to give some people, you know, cause 4v4s on Guardian on Team Slayer, it's just, like, you know, you can't rush sometimes because it's just too much. But.
So, despite what people from forums might try to convince you, it is actually one of the things that, like, every month, you know, we think about it. And I'm pretty sure that as we start making the transition, you know, because after ODST is up, the next thing on the horizon is Reach. And we've got... you know, the multiplayer beta coming out. And we did, you know, we did a similar thing between Halo 2 and Halo 3, where, we released a beta that kind of caused a shift in in what people were playing. And that also ended up being a shift in who was left. And, like, you have to start thinking about, like, well, as this starts to happen, who's going to be left? Who is that hardcore crowd that's going to stick around for Halo 3, even as we start moving on? Exactly. The man with the rocket launch, the power weapons all over his shirt. Well, yeah. Well, so what is likely to happen over basically over the course of 2010 is that we're going to. That's awesome. We're going to probably start shifting the balance, because like right now it's like you're most likely to get ARs, and then there's a good chance, like a solid chance, that you'll get BRs, and then eventually that's probably going to change. One of the things I wish we could do actually is that like make that shift happen based on true skill. So like at some point, like say, you know, you're a 43 or you're a 45, you're probably thinking more about the battle rifle. And I wish, typically, if you're a cliche, that's totally normal. Completely normal. It's one of those things I really wish we could do. It was like one of the first questions that came out of my mouth when I was interviewing for the position. Is like, well, can we separate this by skill? And they're like, that's a great idea. No. And, yeah, or Tundra was Foundry. Oh, no, I'm sorry, you're right. I was thinking of Smashed. Yeah. Tundra was built actually by one of our testers and a guy that's been in the community for a long time, very hardcore player. The reaction to every Forge map we put into the game is always mixed. And then I'm like, wow, people are always hating on our Forge maps. I wonder how the MLG is doing. And then I'll read the MLG forums, and people are like, why is lockdown in matchmaking? I'm like, I feel a little better now. that map, like, I was actually really pleased. Like, at one point, a few months before we had released the Mythic 1 set, Sandbox and those, I basically sent like an APB out to everyone that was like, okay, team, I want maps, make maps. And then I just harassed every single person in the studio. Ended up getting like 50 maps back, and I think we pared them down to 10 that we've used in differing amounts. And that, the plan from the beginning was to, you know, put those in and then get community maps in their place and start weeding them out. And we've actually really begun doing that. Like, for September, we've pulled out, Plurality and Cubed and sorry Tomo, but Vessel's next, and you know, starting to do that stuff to, and kind of the entire goal was to give people like this idea as to like, yeah, you can totally get maps in here, look, we're doing it, here's some placeholder stuff, get the real maps into us, and then we'll make it happen. Oh yeah, who's next? Oh god, so many hands.
Oh, I was just wondering, when you remade Lockout Blackout, and you probably saw a lot of the forum posts, how people, and, you know, maybe people complained a little bit about not being able to jump from Elbow to Snipe 2 and some of those things. Did that come into mind when you remade Heretic and tried to stay more true to the original formula, maybe for Midship?
Abso-freaking-lutely. When we remade Lockout and when we made Blackout, the idea before we had this vernacular that we use all the time now whenever we're talking about remakes was that it was a re-envisioning. And there was a lot of things that we absolutely made sure we kept. But, at the same time, we totally took some liberties with it. And, when we talked about the map, I think we were a little too quick to say, like, oh, it's a remake. It's just like the map you knew and loved. When really, I mean, and at the time we knew, I mean, there were some necessary changes, like scale changes, because you jump at a different height, you move at different speeds. So some things had to be closer, lower, physics have changed. So there were changes we had to make. And then there were changes that we wanted to make that were mainly aesthetic. I mean, there weren't a whole lot of, like, design changes that were made, outside of the stuff that was necessary for, you know, the different, like, yeah, exactly. We had to do some Halo 3 stuff, and then we took some artistic liberties, and I think it was those artistic liberties that ultimately kind of impacted the map negatively, and kind of, I mean, it's still, it's an extremely popular map. It's one of the least vetoed maps in matchmaking. Blackout, yeah. It's one of those, like, if you approach it from, I am expecting to play Lockout in the way I played Lockout, yeah, you're gonna end up with a different experience, and that might not be ideal. But if you treat it as Blackout, as a map that is not Lockout, then you can still have a good time. So when we did Avalanche, Avalanche was like, this is a new vision. This is things we are changing. This is not going to be Sidewinder, because we actually, like, Sidewinder had some things going on that we actually wanted to change for ourselves. And at the same time, between Halo 1 and Halo 3, we've gotten a little better at doing things that look cold. So there was a whole bunch of, like, artistic stuff we wanted to do, and we wanted to have a bunch of liberties, and at the same time, we wanted to do, like, this symmetrical horseshoe of a big team map. So we definitely kind of let the juices flow a little more freely. But then when it came time for Heretic, I mean, after months of watching the reactions to Blackout, which were less than positive, and Avalanche, which were really positive, we kind of came to the decision that was like, well, if we're doing Midship, if we're remaking Midship, we know exactly who we're making this map for, which means we know exactly how we need to treat this, and this needs to be a remake. So from the beginning, and there was actually contention at the studio for this. I mean, there were people that wanted to change things, and luckily people stepped in and they're like, no, we did that once. Shishka's still got the scars; he can show you. And so the philosophy became a fidelity upgrade rather than like design changes or like a re-envisioning or anything like that. So we treated it more like basically like we were taking it, and of course we did do tweaks and such to make sure that, you know, jump heights, run movement, all that stuff fit, but we did it all to make sure that the map played exactly the same. As opposed to, you know, letting some things slip by in the name of, like, art changes and stuff like that. And, the map looks amazing. The artist responsible, you know, we need to pay him $100,000,000. I gotta be honest. The stuff he did with that map is incredible. People were playing the map rather than just exploring it, but once you get the chance, you should absolutely look out the windows, because even the sky on that map, when I say sky, I mean outer space, absolutely amazing. Yeah, the shared. That would be the technical term. But, oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, like, my favorite thing, even, like, yesterday, I hope this came out on the live stream, but, like, the first game ever the pros played was on Citadel. And then the second game that they played was on Heretic, and when Heretic loaded, the people in the crowds, they were like, oh my god. And then, like, the greatest part is I was sitting directly to the left of Legit as he was playing, and those guys were like, oh my god. as everybody was just, like, beside themselves. Yeah, no kidding, it's like, well, I didn't mind BXR work, Bungle. But, yeah, no, like, yeah, I mean, as people got to the front of the line today, people were just like, they would see Citadel load up, or they would actually, Citadel was pretty exciting for people, but, I mean, let's be honest, most people were here to see Heretic. Like, and they'd see Heretic, come up, and they were just, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And, you know, and every so often we'd be like, the line starts over here, please step back, we need some room, I got to breathe. I think all the work paid off on the map, and everybody seemed really excited. Everybody that played, we had, you know, pros and not so pros alike. Everybody had a shot at it, and everybody seemed to really love what they saw.
All right, well, hey guys, this is Red Dot. But I know you guys are looking toward the future quite a bit with Reach and Halo 3 ODST about to ship. But have you guys thought to look back at all to like Halo 1, Halo 2, possibly like re-releasing them for the Xbox 360, new format, or like adding multiplayer functions, that sort of thing? I know a lot of people, MLG events, they're pretty into the Halo 2, the competitiveness that they felt back in 06, and kind of the stories attached with that. And I don't know if you guys have given any thoughts bringing that back, possibly.
So, of course, like right now, the majority of the team, the vast majority, like 98% of us, are focused on Reach. And that is like the only thing we are thinking about. I mean, after that, it's totally a the sky's the limit sort of thing. Of course, we've still got, you know, a healthy relationship with Microsoft. Who is naturally, as it's their IP, they are publishing Reach for us, and they're publishing, obviously, ODST as well. And it certainly behooves us to maintain that relationship, and so what comes from that, I mean, who can say, honestly? We've certainly got all of these ideas that were running through our heads, none of which I can talk about for obvious reasons. The other thing, though, I mean, they've got their own group started up, 343 Industries. You should definitely be keeping track of what those guys are working on. You guys personally know about as much as I do as to what they're working on. But I've got to meet a bunch of their team. Obviously, I know Frank O'Connor already. But, I mean, like, through events and stuff, I've got to meet Corinne Yu, and I've met some of their other folks, and all very, very talented people. So, I mean, we're definitely looking forward to what they're doing. And I think, I mean, it's just as open for what they might do with the franchise as what we might do after Reach. I mean, it's just for us, I mean, it's like, do we want to keep working in Halo, or do we want to expand and finally, you know, see what else we can do? I mean, we've got this incredible pool of talent. I think we've done a pretty good job proving that we could make a good Halo game. I personally would love to see, you know, what else we can do. It's just, you know, it's a matter of deciding, you know, is the timing right? How long is it going to take us? I mean, creating something, do we start completely new? You know, we basically, it's just a matter of us, you know, telling ourselves, be brave and move on. Or do we, I wouldn't even call it the easy road, because if we were going to do, like, even if we were going to remake a Halo or bring a Halo game back, we would do it to the nines, right? Like, it would be a full project. I mean, even as it is, like, when we port a map, even if it's, I mean, like, Heretic, Midship to Heretic was not, like, a small task. It wasn't even one of those things where we could go copy-paste and it was immediately into Halo 3. We actually, I mean, our tools have changed such that we had to make some changes right off the bat just to get the map to load. And then from there, that's when we started improving on the fidelity of the map. So it's totally open. And I basically didn't answer your question, and I apologize. I'm hoping that we get the opportunity to move outside of Halo. Not that we don't love making Halos. We absolutely, I mean, we've had a blast, and we've created the team of, like, the best team in the world by making these games. We've managed to attract so much talent. But I would love to see what else we can do.
So, if you're probably going to move on from Halo after Halo Reach is done. Are you still going to plan on staying on the Xbox 360, or are you going to try to reach out to different consoles, or are you still going to try to do FPSs, or what kind of the next move Bungie's going to make and what they're going to do for gaming?
Yeah, we're going back to our roots. We're only going to make games for OS 7 for the Macintosh. Yeah. You heard it here first, kids. Oh, yeah? Oh, Crackdown. That wasn't Bungie, but I gotta admit I loved it too, yeah. Yeah. It was Real Time Worlds, I think, worked on that. I played the demo before I actually, I played the demo when it came out. And for me, that was like, okay, this is the demo for the game that the Halo 3 beta is being released with. Let's see what this is. And I played through it. I actually played co-op with a friend of mine because we figured out that if you change the language, you could actually manage to partner with your friends. Devious. We would play it, and then it would be like time up, and then we would play it again, and we'd play it again, and we're like, this game does not need Bungie's help. This game is awesome. And I picked that game up, and I played all the way through it with the same guy. Like, we co-opted our way through the entire game. When the first group of downloadable content came down, we totally rocked that stuff. To get to your question, which was very similar to the question earlier, true. But again, like, in terms of if we decide to move on from Halo, once again, I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, ultimately what that is determined by, I think, is like, if we come up with an idea and we like that idea, who do we end up having publish that? Because, I mean, obviously, if we decide, we've got a solid reputation, we've got a solid relationship with Microsoft. If we go with them, I don't see us releasing things for the PS3. But, I mean, if we end up with, like, another publisher, I think the bird has a question. I think the bird wants to know why I haven't taken the missile pod out of Construct. I don't know. it can go any direction. I mean, literally, I don't have those answers for you because those answers don't exist.
As far as Halo 3 goes, how long do you think that's going to last as a major multiplayer experience? And even for just MLG, how long do you think it's going to last, and how long do you think gamers are going to hold on to Halo 3 before the next greatest thing comes out?
Personally, I'd like to think it's going to work a bit like the Halo 2 to Halo 3 transition did, where once we introduced Halo 3 into people's diets, the move was pretty much unanimous. There are still some very hardcore people that play Halo 2 all the time, and I hope for their sake that Microsoft keeps Halo 2 alive. There was some talk like a week or two ago about the reason why they're not increasing the friends list because so many people are still playing Halo 2, which says a lot about Halo 2's legs. I'd love to see the Halo 3 have the same legs. At the same time, I mean, we're certainly hoping that when Reach hits shelves that everybody picks it up and everybody gets into it. I don't know how else to answer that question. We would love to see that transition. It's totally, the competition on the 360 is much stiffer than it was. The IW guys make an amazing game. Infinity Ward, sorry. Those guys are incredible. And there's all sorts of games coming out. I mean, Epic and Gears of War, those guys are making a solid franchise. I kind of expect that there will always be a place in people's hearts for Halo 3, but I'm hoping that we move on. When we move on, everyone comes with us, basically.
So you guys have made pretty much all the Halo games except for Halo Wars, which Ensemble made. So when that was announced, what was your guys' reaction to it? Were you involved? Did you have to help out Ensemble a little bit with getting storylines right, models right, that kind of stuff?
If you could also end this question, we had our first Halo Wars episode was quite long in the sense of we hate the story, or I do. It's a very well-told story. So, I'm trying to, I want to see what you would think about it. It's just that it seems like In Halo 3, there was a point that, in my opinion, the Flood came twice at the worst opportune times, and it was, you could tell it was coming. And then in Halo Wars, it was just all the stuff happened, and all of a sudden, nobody knew about it because they were asleep. You know, it was just kind of like a cheesy kind of like way to end a story. It's just that, oh, they never found out because they were all asleep. Is that, I mean, what was your personal opinion about something like the way that Halo Wars ended, if you could specify?
All right, so the first question was about what support Bungie offered Ensemble during the development of Halo Wars. The second question is my personal opinion on the stories. We'll start with the first question. We offered initial support. We gave them the story bible, basically, which is the story bible digested into this form where it's like the complete existing fiction of Halo, plus a whole, including the books. Yeah, the books as integrated, sort of as we saw fit, like, which we try to get as much of those kind of things into official canon as possible. And so they had all of that as a resource, and then just over the years, we've built all these reference files for like everything, including like artist references for, you know, what is Forerunner, for example? What comprises Forerunner architecture? Forerunner landscapes. How is that different from, say, like a human installation? Even down to like, what exactly is the Flood? How does the Flood operate? What is their physiology? What is the hierarchy of evolution within the Flood? All that stuff. We gave them all of it. For a while, when they first started out, they kept in touch with us. They would ask us questions, and we'd try to get them answers. They sent us a couple builds so we could see where they were going. Once they got into full swing of things, they had it all down. And after that, from that point on, they focused. And at that point, we were cracking down on ODST. So we gave them some early support, and then from there they took that and they ran. And I think it turned out like a solid RTS for like the best console RTS I've played in a while, certainly. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of hurdles to cross when you're taking a game that has that kind of micromanagement, and you're changing the interface from a full keyboard to, you know, like a 12 button controller or something like that. Somebody's going to be pissed because I probably got the number of buttons on the 360 controller wrong. And to that one person on the internet, I apologize. Please spare me your message on OptiMatch. I'm good. They had multiple challenges on top of we're not Bungie, and everybody's going to be looking at us when we release a game with the word Halo in it. They also had the challenges of bringing that genre to a console. And there's no other developer that I would have trusted with that. And I think as far as that process goes, they did it as well as any other developer could ever hope to do it. To move on to the other hardline questions... I loved that they added the storyline, like the actual the timeline. The timeline thing is so awesome because it was cool that like they saw all the story bible stuff and they're like, wow, we should try to get some of this into like a digestible form, because I'm sure they saw like the Ascendant Justice guys when they went over the Halo 3 story, and they wrote out exactly what happened, like the terminal conversations and things like that. They worked all that stuff out, pried it apart, wrote these huge, extremely eloquent articles about it, and like the result was just amazing. I mean, and so they're like, wow, like we want to feed that to these guys, and they've written all this stuff, but let's make that available to them. And I personally didn't even know they were going to do that until after the game was released. And I thought that was totally awesome. The story itself, I enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed the game. I think my biggest pet peeve was there is a cutscene where a Marine, I'll avoid spoilers, but a Marine stabs an elite with an energy sword. And this is in their, like, extremely beautiful, I believe Blur made the cutscenes, and they were top-notch, like second to none, fantastically well done. But the thing that bugged me is he stabs this elite, and the elite is on its back on the ground. The sword is, you know, jammed down into him, and the Marine lets go and walks away. And the energy sword just stays there. Like, this is like, completely nerdy, but we're talking about, like, something that is not a solid object. We're talking about, like, superheated, like, magnet-controlled energies. I love Sanctuary. But, yeah, it was just like, hey, that's wrong. And honestly, like, those kind of things, like, they're completely stupid. And I would never actually, like, you know, I would never tell them, like, hey, you guys did a great job, but this thing pisses me off. Because if I did, they would look at me like I'm an idiot, and they'd be right. But, yeah, I mean, like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the way they told the story. I definitely enjoyed the way they introduced narrative into the game itself. So I definitely had a good time playing through it.
One question that you might not be able to ask, or I mean, not answer, I'm sorry.
I will not ask
this question. But a lot of RTS players are, especially with the keyboard, that you can actually use the keyboard on the guide, were wondering why you just can't use a keyboard in Halo Wars. Like, why can't you just can't use that interface? And I was wondering if you knew that reason, or maybe we'd have to try to get someone from Halo Wars development on to answer that question.
That's definitely a conversation to have with someone from Ensemble, or I'm slipping the name of the company that formed when Ensemble shut its doors, but those guys would be the guys to talk to, and it might just be that it was like a technical limitation, or you know, just an issue with building peripheral support in for like a keyboard for the 360. I honestly have no idea.
This question is going to kind of delve into the hypothetical here. It's got less magnitude than the other questions. It's kind of a widely known fact that the Xbox 360 is not exactly the most popular platform in Japan. So, let's say that in order to increase the popularity of the Halo franchise, they decide to create a Cortana and Miranda Keys dating sim on the Nintendo DS. This consists of two questions. First of all, who develops it? And second of all, where does it fit into the Halo story Bible?
That is awesome. For people that couldn't hear that, he had a Kilimanjaro ringtone. Yeah, bring that up to the mic. That's awesome.
Kilimanjaro!
That's awesome.
I haven't killed
that yet. That's awesome. Oh, nice. That's good.
I'm all bungee dick there. I got the rogue shirt, baby.
That's awesome. Yeah, thanks for coming out.
Thanks.
So, that's a hell of a question. And yes, certainly in the realm of the hypothetical. And before I start, I'd like to say to our fans in Japan, we love both of you. a Miranda and Cortana dating sim on the DS. So you specifically called out the DS, which is interesting, which means it's a portable dating sim, which I don't know if that would actually work for the franchise, namely because that would be something I would definitely want to see in high def. I mean, what? Who said that? that's hysterical. If you were going to get and there's a friend of mine that's actually really into visual novel games, so I'm going to correct you right now, and the correct terminology of the genre is visual novel. Dating sims are a subset of the visual novel genre in which specifically you are trying to get it with some girls. Or boys, if that's your thing. That would definitely be something you would want to pass on to a Japanese developer. Halo, to answer the question with some strange sense of seriousness, I mean, one of the reasons Halo doesn't do as well in Japan is that, I mean, it's a Western developer definitely making a Western game. First-person shooters in general are not as well received in Japan. Even, I mean, just in general, like Japan has a much easier time breaking into our market than we do into theirs. So whenever you find out that a game is, like, really successful in Japan that was developed in America, it's like, good on you guys. Yeah, that would be one of those things where if they're going to do it, then, like, I would hope, like, with Halo Legends, the anime series that is coming out, that they would go to the motherland, if you will, where these games come from, and have someone there that knows what they're doing make it. I would play that game specifically because I would love to see a super deformed Cortana that's pissed at you because you missed your date or something. That's just the very idea is just so hysterical to me that I would be like, even if I didn't like it, I would be like, I played through this entire game and I don't know why.
I guess we'll kind of keep it up with the developers thing. Let's just keep it all. Everything's open. All right. It's in the Halo IP. I know that Bungie doesn't officially own it, but they have made most of the story for the Halo IP. One game, any kind of genre, who develops it? Like, what kind of game is it? Like, is it an RTS? Is it a RPG? Is it a story-based game? And who would develop it? Who would you like to see develop a good game in the Halo universe, and what kind would you like to see?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, a few years ago, I would have said, like, RTS Ensemble. Or RTS, us. That's an interesting question. I mean, the great thing about it is that, I mean, it's just basically what this question is like, pick another genre and your favorite developer in that genre. Yeah. Because, I mean, anybody could make a game in the Halo universe, but if you match the developer to the genre, I mean, the result is going to be awesome, especially if they're passionate. It helps if they're passionate about Halo, obviously. Man, I don't even... outside of first-person shooters? I'm pretty big on RPGs, actually. So it'd be interesting to see, like Bethesda, actually, making, like, an expansive world RPG-styled shooter. Yeah, it would be definitely a difficult thing to try to accomplish. But the fiction is flexible enough that they could probably find a way to make that happen. Another option, the obvious one that I imagine is going to result in a quadrillion follow-up questions, and I'm going to regret saying this, and Brian's going to punch me when I get back to the office, is like an MMO, or like a planet-side style. Yeah, like I'm not even going to say anything else about it. I think it could be done. Yeah. I mean, that would be, and again, like, I am very interested to see what comes from 343. Like, I honestly have no idea, and when you talk to those guys, they're obviously very excited. And it's almost like you talk to them, and it's almost like they're overwhelmed. And when you remind them, like, they have infinite options, and they can take that fiction, they can take this really awesome story that we started, and they get to carry the torch and make, you know, whatever game they have ever dreamed of taking place in the Halo universe. It's you see this look that starts off kind of like ecstasy and then ends somewhere in the realm of paralysis. Like, it's thrilling and terrifying to be like, wow, there's like infinite options that we can do. I've heard those guys joke about, you know, Well, dating sims. I heard actually one of them was talking about like grunt dancing games, like DDR with grunts, stuff like that. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting to see where they're going to be going with that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, how the MMO would work, kind of like Guild Wars, on how there's, you would have to be one side. You couldn't be a Covenant and a human. And then in Guild Wars, it's the Char, I think they're called, are attacking the humans, and then you would have to, you would more or less be humans, being like a military recruit, you know, going on missions and whatnot, have to be like a squad. I could see that happening. In a sense that I don't know if I want.
The only limiting factor I see really with an MMO, because I've talked with some other people, and if one were to come out, I think they would really enjoy it. But it's just technology and having the bandwidth and having ping staying low for that many players online at once. And then you have the graphics for if you're on such a big space and you have to store all that locally, and the technology just isn't there right now. And I think maybe 10 years down the line when that technology is available, something like that would be a really big production, I think, and would get fans really riled up.
Does anybody else have any other questions before? I have one last one, but if anybody else does.
All right, this is dealing with Halo 2 servers being shut off after Halo 3 ODST launch. Do you know the reasoning behind that?
Has there been, like, an official word on that? Like, I've been kind of heads down on stuff. I mean, there's kind of, like, I know there was something kind of, something was mentioned, and I, as far as I can tell, that started rumors. To clarify on what was originally said, a lot of people have been asking the Xbox Live team, why am I still limited to only 100 people on my friends list? And their explanation for that has been there are still so many people playing Halo 2 that they don't want to. In order to make this change, that basically means they have to stop supporting original Xbox games, because a lot of the 360 service and the original Xbox service are on the same stuff and they use the same technology. And apparently, in order to update friends list the maximum to beyond 100, they actually have to stop supporting original Xbox games on Xbox Live. And they actually, what was originally said was the reason they're not doing that is because there are still so many people playing Halo 2 that they don't want to cut those people off. They want those people to still be able to play Halo 2. And I actually haven't heard anything saying that they've officially made the decision to do that. I could be wrong. I'm a little bit out of the loop on those things. But, if the time comes when you can no longer play Halo 2 on Xbox Live, that would end up being the reason. Or not necessarily just friends list, but any kind of incompatibility between the 360 version of Live and the tech they're using from original Xbox Live that would have to be modified. If they decide upgrading that stuff becomes more important than supporting original Xbox Live, that's when Halo 2 would go down. And I'm sure those guys are weighing that question very carefully. They're considering, you know, what that would do, how that would impact Live players and Halo 2 players in particular.
I guess my final question is, before we head out, is there anything else we should expect that we did not talk about from Bungie, from either ODST or Reach? Just something off the wall or something, you know, how you guys usually like to... I'm not going to say that... Not like that, but sometimes we should expect that, you know, maybe we weren't aware of or something like that.
The unexpected.
Too easy. Obviously, we haven't shown our total hand, our whole hand, even on ODST. We've described kind of like the highlights of what it's going to be like to play campaign, but there's a lot about campaign itself that we haven't talked about, that we're not going to talk about there's stuff we like to see people discover these things. We like these things to be revealed to people as they're playing rather than telling them ourselves. like with Halo 2, we did our very best to make sure that word about the Arbiter never got out, because that was a big thing. And then, you know, Halo 3's entire story was pretty mum for the entirety of up until its release. And we're doing pretty much the same thing. I mean, there's a lot we just haven't said. There's a lot of stuff happens in the ODST story that I would love to be able to talk about right now. I've got visions in my head of things that happen in this game. As soon as I start talking about, like, the story, there are specific moments. Exactly. Like, I'm sorry, I really wish I could talk about it. And meanwhile, in my head, I'm replaying these things. I'm like, that was freaking sweet! Yeah. Or even worse, I could be like, oh, you remember that time? Oh, you haven't played it yet. That's too bad. No, I wouldn't do that. Other than just now. But no, absolutely, there is more to find out about ODST, and some things we're just going to keep silent about up until the day it's in your hands. I am going to follow up with that on Reach. It is simply just too soon to actually be saying anything about Reach. A lot of people have been asking me, today in particular, while we had the booth running, and every time someone asked me about Reach, I told them that one thing I could tell them for sure is that Reach is a video game. I know that for a fact, having been working on it myself, it is, I can tell you that it has pixels and graphics, at least three dimensions. I will promise you three dimensions. outside of that, it's actually, I mean, it's way too soon for us to be talking about. Obviously, that will change after ODST is in everybody's hands, after it's out the door. It'll be time for, you know, the marketing crew to start thinking about how we're going to start telling people about Reach. We've got the beta coming after, you know, stuff like that. So, a lot of people can, I mean, basically we're going to let it stay open to speculation for a while. I poke my head in on our own, like, we have a forum for Reach, but nobody from Bungie posts in it. And we like reading it because it's hilarious. Especially every time someone says, I have proof, or I know for a fact, you have no proof and you don't know a damn thing. It's fun to watch the speculation, but we're going to have to let you guys speculate a little longer.
Going back a second to Halo Wars, but it's going to... Halo Wars, I said it on the podcast, was that it was the best story for a game, but it left nothing after the game. Like, you didn't learn anything else that happened in that story that could go on past the game. It was just that they ended it, that was it. Now, I remember one of the ODST videos that, for a split second, he turns the flashlight on and it says, Remember Reach, in one of the videos. Is there some kind of way that ODST is going to lead for something that we're going to learn about Reach, just something at all?
That would be telling, and I'm not going to tell you. The Remember Reach thing, it's cool that you caught that, actually. I mean, that's just, that's us, you know, connecting all the dots, reminding people that this is a larger story arc. One of the other things worth pointing out is that the game begins with an actual drop sequence. You get into a drop pod, you're fired from outside of the atmosphere into the atmosphere, and then things go wrong as you're looking down. You see a Covenant cruiser over New Mombasa jump into slip space. It's worth pointing out that if you watch very closely, you will see a ship that looks fairly familiar scooting up next to that Covenant cruiser as it jumps into slip space. But, I mean, those are things that we do just to, you know, connect all the dots, remind people that, you know, there's a larger fiction, and this is like a side story in that larger fiction. Good memory. But yeah, I mean, and there's, I think, As far as your answer, or rather your question, I cannot actually answer that. I'm gonna let you guys find out.
Well, I have to ask this one because all the fans are gonna want me to ask this, and I already know the answer. But can I has recon?
And to think 5 seconds ago I liked you.
What was it?
That's not true. I didn't like you 5 seconds ago. You can have recon. In a few weeks, ODST comes out. We have these achievements called Vidmasters. You achieve them, and you can have recon. At this point, we're not actually giving recon out as part of contests. We're so close to the release of ODST that, you know, we want people to, adjust to the fact that that is actually going to be your easiest route to getting recon in the future, so.
Okay, well, last thing I want to address real quick right before we leave is, you guys were kind enough to bring Halo 3 ODST, Firefight, and show off the multiplayer maps, which was, I think it was a blast. I mean, we were sitting right by you, on the left of main stage while that was all showing off, and one of the things I thought was really interesting was you and Brian Gerard were having to go around and tell everyone to use X because they were playing on Crater at night. So, that was one of the funny things. Tell us a little bit about that and how successful you think bringing ODST was to MLG Dallas.
So, the funny thing is, it was actually, like, I gave my side, Brian prepared one side because it was 2 games of 4 going on if you missed the feed. 2 games of 4 on Firefight. I had told my side, it was like, hey guys, so you're playing a nighttime map. In ODST, we have this thing we call visor mode. It's a light amplification mode, and it helps you navigate and identify targets. So as soon as this map starts, you're going to hit the X button, and that's going to help you locate guys. Brian didn't do that. So during the game, we're sitting there, like, right next to Legit, and we're like, press the X button! Do it! Do it! And we're looking up at the screens, and we're at an odd angle, so it looked like to us like it was all just pitch black, and we're like, oh god, this is really bad. And then, like, some of those guys, I think either they heard our raspy whispering, or they figured it out on their own, but, you know, they hit that, and they're like, oh hey, suddenly I can see where I'm going. That's probably the most significant difference between the previous Halos and ODST. That's one of the things that makes ODST ODST. Yeah, so you don't actually use equipment ever in ODST. You don't throw bubbles or drains or regens. That's not to say those things won't be used against you, just you don't get to pick one up and use it against them. And in its place, that's where we put visor mode. And I mean, I've seen a lot of discussion about visor mode. People are worried about it making the game too easy or something insane like that. After Legendary Firefight breaks them a couple times, I imagine they'll feel differently. They'll develop a love relationship with the visor. And certainly, there are moments, long moments actually, major parts of the campaign where you really rely on visor mode. I mean, we definitely designed it to be an integral part of the campaign experience, and it's certainly invaluable in the darker Firefight maps as well.
When I was waiting in line to do Firefight, I overheard you talking about something called engineers, and I hadn't heard that or seen that in any Vidocs before. Can you shed any more light on what that is?
So the engineers were only last week shown off. They were shown off in some really short video by IGN, and basically, they're I would call them new, but they're in fact they're not new. They showed up in Halo Wars, and they were originally conceived for Halo 1, but we couldn't figure out a way to actually make them fun at the time, so we cut them, and we're bringing them back in ODST. I just heard a squeaky toy, and suddenly I want to chase it. I may have to I may have to cut this answer short because all I want to do is find that thing and just tear it apart. the engineers themselves, like, if you watch the video, you'll see what they do on their own is they float around and they try to stay away from you. But what they do for the Covenant, you will see, like, you'll be shooting at a grunt and everything's going great and his buddies are starting to freak out. Then all of a sudden they have overshields. You're like, oh, crap. And then if you look up, you're going to see this, you know, this engineer floating over their heads, and then you realize there's a problem. God help you if two engineers start floating over the same unit of Covenant. Bad things happen to you. They introduce an interesting dynamic, and in every campaign for Halo, you learn as you go how to prioritize, you know, who needs to go down first, and then who do I pick off after that. And these guys, you start to find that they, like, you see them, and they immediately start taking priority. At the same time, I mean, they're directly they're completely harmless to you. They don't ever attack you at all. In fact, if you get near them, they fly the heck away. They try to avoid you at all costs. But the nature of what it is they do makes them so dangerous that you start, you know, you will drop everything to make sure that they are out of your way. God help you in firefight if you ever end up with engineers and chieftains in the same space. I'm just going to leave it at that. No, not to vehicles. Do they go inside? Yeah, they probably will give the gunner and the pilot overshields. I say probably because it's been a while since I've played firefight, and I'm trying to remember, like, which missions, like, some missions have engineers, some of them don't, and I'm trying to remember if there's actually, like, a crossover where there are missions, firefight missions with Wraiths and engineers. But basically any infantry unit that they get near gets overshield.
Thank you, Shishka, for coming out, bringing out Halo 3 ODST, which comes out September 22nd in about 3.5 weeks, coming with also with 3 new Halo 3 multiplayer maps and Firefight. So, anyone have any other last questions before we wrap up? Cool. Okay, we got another question from Brent.
Okay, no, it's not. In regards to ODST, how awesome is your game?
How awesome is the game? I would rate it a really damn awesome. No, like, we've mentioned this several times before, but it was a smaller team of, some of the more established, that's a funny way of saying older, employees on the team actually, were the primary ODST team, and those guys, they outdid themselves. The final product, it was more than Microsoft expected. It was more than we expected. The game is absolutely phenomenal, and we're totally excited to have people play it for the first time. Any more marketing? You covered most of it. I mean, it's September 22nd. That's the release of ODST. ODST is 2 discs. The main disc being ODST campaign and firefight mode, and you'll be able to use theater similar to how you use theater in Halo 3 campaign. And then the second disc is called Halo 3 Mythic. So if anyone read the weekly update on Friday and they saw when we were announcing playlists that require the Halo 3 Mythic disc, that's actually what we were talking about. And Halo 3 Mythic is all of the multiplayer maps from Halo 3, the original ones that came on the Halo 3 disc, plus all of the DLC, plus Heretic, Citadel, and Midship.
Are there still going to be playlists with the free DLC available? So if someone that doesn't have or doesn't want to go out and buy the maps can still bring their friends on and play a social or something like that.
Now you're asking questions about my job. How dare you? no, that's fine. You're good. No, don't make me work. So, what we announced, I imagine folks here might not have had a chance to read yet, but, we are including all those maps, the three new maps basically as optional in every playlist. And then we're actually adding three, new playlists. One of them is we're bringing back Team Mythic, with the three maps in it. We've actually got a big Team Mythic that's going to be out. That's going to be focusing mainly on sandbox variants and, Longshore. And, we've got a playlist called Team Throwback, which is basically a new ranked team objective playlist. And we call it Throwback because we were very careful to come up with, it started basically as like, how do we get 4v4 two flag on Heretic going? How do we get that started? And, so we actually made changes to the game types. It's not like the two flag BR. Well, two flag BRs is in there as people know it, but there's also like another version of two flag BRs with shorter flag return, stuff like that. And so what the question really becomes, and this is like the bigger question that I have to ask once a month, basically, is how do we handle DLC, in terms of, matchmaking populations and how people are getting DLC. And, people definitely noticed that we treated Mythic differently than Legendary, in that, Legendary, we were pretty gentle about it, and then with Mythic, we're like, it's time to move. And we started, after Mythic came out, we were actually really aggressive about updating playlists to require Mythic. And the reason for that actually was, shortly before Mythic came out, we actually saw the numbers for how Legendary was doing. And it was disproportionate to how we were supporting them in matchmaking. And we're like, oh my god, that's terrible. And so this time around, it's like, we had kind of an idea as to what to expect of, people buying the maps. And we wanted to support that, because we definitely want to support the people that are supporting us. And it's not that people that don't buy the maps aren't supporting us, it's that, the people that do get the maps are, I mean, they're keeping up with our momentum, and we definitely want to support that. in the long run, I mean, with all the maps on one disc, that invites some rather interesting opportunities. I mean, for the longest time, we kept a frame of reference where there's always the no hard drive crowd that we wanted to make sure could play at least some aspect of matchmaking. And then there is also, that kind of works with the I'm never going to buy DLC crowd, or I cannot buy DLC crowd. And I think there will always be a place for those people. It'll probably be like Social Slayer and Lone Wolves for all eternity. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, if, God willing, ODST does really well, and, we find like, hey, most of the people playing are playing on Blue Disc. I'm speaking in code words. Blue Disc was the code for the Halo 3 Mythic Disc. Yeah, insider and completely worthless to everyone. And no, I know exactly what the Ascendant Justice guys are going to do when they hear this. It has nothing to do with that weird Walmart thing about Halo 3 Blue. I have no idea what that was. Nobody actually knows what that was. The interview is over. We've only got a dozen more questions. But, so that's kind of an open question. What we're doing this time is, because it's a lot different saying, like, hey, everybody, buy a $60 game to continue playing the $60 game, as opposed to, hey, guys, buy $10 map pack to play, you know, half of the matchmaking experience or something like that. Absolutely, but, yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying at all that the deal isn't worth it, because it absolutely is. I mean, it completely is totally a huge deal, and I think people are going to be perfectly happy with the purchase when they get it. We've still got, like, that doesn't necessarily mean, like, say, you know, a whole bunch of people get ODST, like, day one. they're going to play ODST, which isn't exactly the same thing as like putting in Mythic. So if we were to be all gung ho about it and be like, hey, everything is Mythic disc required. Meanwhile, all the people with the Mythic disc aren't actually playing multiplayer. Then all of a sudden, the people left playing Halo 3 are like, what the hell? So we're going to be a little more conservative about it. And then when we see like, hey, it actually turns out that like a critical mass is playing from blue disc, then we'll probably switch back to like an aggressive mode. And I imagine by the time that Reach actually ships, we'll have locked down most of the playlists as requiring the majority of the content.
The other thing I thought about was, have you heard about the Intimidation ARG thing? The YouTube thing, and this is the way this world ended or something like that? Have you heard anything about that? Can you shed any light on that?
The only light I can shed on it is that it's not actually an official ARG. I'm pretty sure it's a fan-run ARG. I have no idea what their ends are. I have no idea what they're going to do with that. It's cool that they clearly have this idea and that they're doing this thing for it. It can actually be a little frustrating to us because they didn't do anything to make sure that people didn't realize that, hey, this isn't like Bungie employees that are running this or anything like that. They just kicked it off. And so we have to be like, no, guys. I mean, and I'm sure whatever they're going to do, whatever, it's going to be neat. But I wouldn't hold it to canon or anything like. Not that the story of I Love Bees was especially canon, but it's worth like if you're expecting something that's going to be super revealing about a future project. Or anything like that, I would not be turning to, I believe it's called Intimation. It might end up being like a cool little thing, but ultimately it's going to be fan fiction.
We definitely appreciate Shishka for, sitting down with us for about an hour and a half. 90 minutes of your life just thrown away. So. Yeah, we told them yesterday. We asked if we could get an interview. They said, yeah, just come by and we'll set something up. So, we appreciate you coming and sitting down with us. We thank you for, Bungie's support and MLG and to all the other sponsors out there. Once again, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure to get to talk to you guys. It was absolutely a pleasure to give you all a chance to, come out and play the game, play some Firefight, get to see Heretic and Citadel. You guys, everybody seems really excited about it, which makes me excited, and in turn, I mean, when everyone at the team gets to hear about what the reaction was like, everybody's going to be really excited. We're looking forward to everyone getting a chance to play. So, it was absolutely a pleasure to get to come out, and definitely a lot of fun to get to be on the podcast.
Thanks again. This has been an Inside Podtacular exclusive, MLG Dallas. With Shishka Bungie. So, thanks guys for listening in.
This week on the GamerCast Network. The podcast has been replaced by a small sandwich, only on Destructoid. Episode 208 of Gamertag Radio features a roundtable discussion on Beatles Rock Band and an interview with Josh Randall from Harmonix. Podtacular episode 202 is all about MLG Dallas, featuring impressions of Halo 3 ODST and interviews with Bungie employees. Discover the community that brings you all these great podcasts and more at GamerCastNetwork.com.